Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Nate Rice, and this podcast topic is practical mentorship, focusing on ATP 6-22.1, providing feedback, counseling, coaching, mentoring. We welcome Colonel Andy Morgado, Interim Director of the Army University Press and formerly the 18th Director of the School of Advanced Military Studies, and Ms. Judy Price, Editor and Doctrine Developer for the Center for Army Leadership and Retired Engineer. Additionally, we will be hearing from First Lieutenant Melissa Zarnogursky, who will be sharing some vignettes from her experience with mentorship over the years. She and Colonel Morgado had penned an article for Military Review Online titled "The Science, Art, and Practice of Mentorship, Making ATP 6-22.1 Come Alive," published on November of 2024. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Nate.
Great to be here.
All right, to start off, I want to talk a little bit about Army doctrine background. The 622 series of publications lays out what the Army thinks makes a good leader and how to develop these qualities. In my experience, the doctrine seems very relatable and accessible. As someone who was an instructor at ROTC, the TTPs on providing feedback and deep dives into each of the attributes and competencies were indispensable. Ms. Price, when the team was updating ADP 6-22.1, what were some of the big ideas that you were trying to get across?
Sure. One of the things I really, really wanted to do is make sure that all of our Army members understood how important it is to provide feedback, whether it's through counseling, coaching, or mentoring. And so we want to provide a common understanding of what each one was and why each one has a distinct purpose. So when you're thinking about that, realizing that counseling is for basically reviewing past and current performance, that coaching is sort of to guide learning or execution, and then mentoring itself is to provide guidance for professional growth.
Yeah, I'm really glad you just mentioned the fact that it's really all about interacting with people and communicating, because that's what really that manual is about. And I have to say that 622.1 is a really well put together manual. I mean, I think Army leadership doctrine as a whole, I think your team's just done a fantastic job of making it really practical for the user, regardless of rank. It's very user friendly. It's written at a great level that can be understood by everyone. And I'm not insulting anyone's intelligence, but any rank could pick this up. I'm an 06, and I could pick up that manual and use it just as effectively as an E1 picking it up to figure out, hey, what's this leadership thing really all about? Because I'm sure there are plenty that are doing that. So it really is about communication, and it's really well-structured to facilitate that.
And I'm glad that you have that reaction, because that's really what we're going for. So we want it to be used by every member of our Army, regardless of rank, regardless of your status, military or civilian.
Yep.
One more follow-up question to kind of get the thought process on this. A lot of leaders in the Army are trying to formalize mentorship a little bit within their organizations and provide some more structure for mentorship within BCTs or divisions or the like. Often, though, it turns into something that's a little bit more mandatory and almost a counseling thing. You know, counseling is more about supervision and a chain of command. Mentorship is not so much that. I know the ADP very clearly lays out mentorship and what it is. It's an informal relationship for professional development. If you see other organizations doing this kind of stuff, what would you like to say to them, and what would you like them to concentrate on?
So there are eight types of relationships when we talk about mentoring. And so supervisory mentoring is one of them, but that's really within units. And that's really a focus on day-to-day positions, what you're doing. You know, it's meant to be kind of that guiding what you're doing now, how you're doing it now. So that happens in units, but it's not really formal. It's very informal. So when you've got units that do formal programs, I hesitate to tell them to do that, because it really works better when it's not an assigned position or assigned requirement. It really works better when you can identify someone who can provide you that guidance of something that you need help with or understanding. Not to say that they can't do them, but I think it has to be that they can't just say, you are that person's mentor. Now you are that person's mentor, because you know, the understanding or the interest may not be there. It may not be a connection. It's all about relationships and the communication. So I know units have mentorship programs, and that's great, but I think it has to be built so that it's voluntary and that the participants have the ability to select who they need as a mentor, not somebody saying, okay, like I said, you're that person's mentor. That doesn't work as well, because it becomes a check the block, and it sort of defeats the whole purpose of what mentoring is for.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll come out as we sit here and talk this afternoon, but that's one of the things I guess I'm most allergic to. And Melissa and I, as we sat down to think about writing an article, is we knew 622-1 was a good manual. We both learned a lot from it. We use that within our mentoring relationship. But we also knew there's limitations to the manual as well. So that was kind of part two of why we wanted to write the article is, well, let's expand a little bit on this mentorship idea. But we also looked at, counseling, coaching, and mentoring. We saw some limitations in the manual. We wish that the manual maybe took it a different way or deepened it. And the criticism was not, poke the authors in the eye. No, it's a professional criticism, a professional discussion. We saw perhaps there's too much formalization at times in the paper drill. I was in a meeting and this Army civilian professional was talking about their very regimented counseling program that had, 15 appendices and, the employee had to sign them all. I'm like, wow, aren't we just taking all the love out of counseling? We make it that painful on the person being counseled. So this is an example of the formality that we're really kind of rebelling against because, yeah, it needs to be structured, but if we input so much structure and formality that it kills us. So that's one of the things that we talked about. And then counseling, coaching, mentoring as not distinct, separate functions, but really there's so much overlap. And I mean, we drew a very simple diagram, maybe overly simplistic, but we really got to think of all three circles kind of overlapping. And you have to use a different tool depending upon what that officer needs. Inserting a formal relationship in it, as you mentioned, that's not probably not the way to go. And then our last really major critique was we have these domains, institutional, operational, and then self-development in terms of how we do development. We wish the manual maybe incorporated a little bit more and talked about the kind of that free flow in between them and how you have to use, coaching, mentoring, and counseling in all three domains and how do you do that. But, formalizing it, we have an issue because I think you take the true spirit out.
Lieutenant Sergeant Gursky and I had a conversation about mentorship where she talked about her first assignment. She walked into a difficult and disorganized situation in the headquarters maintenance section, but found some value in mentorship at many levels.
Within my first couple weeks, I had already reached back out to my bulk instructor a few times, sort of, gave her that atmospherics about the situation I walked into. And she also was like, oh, wow, that's a lot. And I was like, hey, I just, sometimes it was just asking for some products or, if she had any advice on how to approach a situation. And, I definitely felt that support from the schoolhouse, especially in my first couple months, that I could reach back and sort of pull some things forward. And then at that point, I was able to sort of establish myself within the 8th Army footprint. I had a CW5, the chief of ordnance for 8th Army, because I didn't have a 915. I didn't have an E7, actually, for several months. And, that CW5 for 8th Army really took me under his wing as well. He knew I really didn't have any organic support. So whenever I needed anything, and oftentimes, he would check down on me a couple times showing up unannounced to my office. My battalion commander in that unit, who is a mentor for me now, another great example of just a leader who believed in me to be able to take on that mission and gave me the space I needed to think and try things and work creatively to problem solve that problem set, and certainly was a resource for me when I had problems going on. And, I would set a plan out and, after several months, if things weren't working or if I felt like other entities in the organization were fighting against it, then I my battalion commander had told me, the first few weeks that I had a direct line to him. I was in a really tough kind of position between my company and battalion, working directly for my battalion XO and the battalion commander, that I had that direct line if I was having issues. And there was a couple times I finally said, hey, this is not the time to be uncomfortable and worry about going to talk to the boss. I have to. I got nothing but support when I did.
All right. So as we heard from her on that one, she had lots of different mentors that helped her through that time and to give her some perspective. So let's talk about mentorship from a mentor's perspective.
Yeah. I mean, working with Melissa has been great, and as we began this relationship of mentor and mentee, we had some discussions about, what are the misperceptions of mentorship out there, because there's just quite a few. And you can look at it at the two extremes, and there's a lot that fall in between. But on one extreme, quite frankly, a cronyism. where the perception is that your mentor will be that person that's going to give you the golden ticket to that next job you want. And that's it. I mean, that's the sole function. Hey, you're going to get a hookup to your next job. So, I mean, quite frankly, that's cronyism. And it does happen, to be quite frank. But let's call it what it is. It's not mentorship. On the other end of the spectrum is apathy. You know, why do I need a mentor? You know, it serves no purpose. They're making me get a mentor, as we just talked about. And so that's the, you know, the far end of the extreme. And you see plenty of that. And people are, you know, compelled, you know, to get a mentor. So I would say it falls on neither extreme, right? It's really about that communication, that need, right, of wanting to learn and finding the right person that's going to help you with that. And then on the flip side, you know, being a mentor is identifying those people with potential or have a spark or you see the need and you offer yourself to help fill that knowledge gap. What I tell folks, and we include it in our article, you know, as a mentor, you have to reach out your hand, right? You know, and if the other person doesn't take it, you know, don't be down on yourself or angry at the person for not accepting your offer, but you made the offer, right? As a professional, as someone who wants to mentor and help develop our Army or a junior leader, you know, reach out your hand. Someone may take it, someone may ignore it, but you should do it. And so that's what it's really all about.
Yeah. And going back to our scenario, just the whole thing about mentorship is not a one-size-fits-all endeavor. So you've got to focus it on the person, the situation, and the goals or the purpose. And so when I'm thinking through this, like, you know, the different types of mentorship that we have, her scenario brings out situational mentoring, where she went back to her bullet instructor for one-off kind of information because she needed guidance and advice. And then, of course, she had the option to carry on, you know, after that to a more long-term thing. And then with the warrant officer, she had peer mentorship going on because that's a relationship with someone within the same organization or grade or job series, whatever. But the purpose there is to support the colleague in professional development and growth through mutual learning. And so in that case, peer mentoring is not hierarchical. It's not prescriptive or judgmental. And so those two were very clear in her scenario.
So mentorship is a relationship that's defined by its usefulness in the end. Each soldier has different experiences and expertise, some that will be useful for others and may not be useful in other times. Lieutenant Sergeant Grosky and I spoke about this and how mentorship is not limited to one mentor or one purpose.
I had the Deputy Chief of Staff for the G4 in my division, whom I had some interactions with on maintenance train walks, and I think at the time I was really excited to see a female logistician who is base branch ordnance. And so I had connected with her for a little bit, you know, sent her some emails, asked her some follow-on questions. I had some in-person conversations with her and then, you know, did some phone calls. And, you know, at that point I was, you know, she was definitely very open to having a mentorship conversation with me. You know, seeing from her foxhole, a junior female officer coming up in the ranks, in the logistics branch. And I was just really grateful to have somebody who could guide me a little bit more specifically within my branch who understood what it would look like. When I look holistically at the mentors I've had across my career, and in most cases, they were not my base branch, you know, I was completely okay with, but there are times where sometimes having a mentor within your branch is really helpful. It takes a village to sustain and thrive in this profession. So having a network of men and women to help you walk through that journey will enable you to make better decisions, to be more resilient, to problem solve, to think about things differently. And for that reason, I've had a lot of different mentors over the years. So, you know, some are situational. They're mentoring me through a situation that could look like an exercise, a certain point in time. Sometimes those relationships then naturally end with the closure of that situation. For me, that looked like that branch mentor that I'd had within our division headquarters. I had that relationship with her for a period of time. You know, she was a great resource for me with regard to logistics. And then, you know, once I'd left the unit, that relationship had naturally came to a close. And it's not that I don't feel like I can't still reach out to her if I need something, but it had naturally sort of died off. If you're looking for specific types of support, maybe something very unique to your branch or situation, understanding that can help inform, you know, what type of mentor you're going to look for. But as I look back at the mentors I've chosen throughout my career, there's a really obvious common thread. All of my mentors share very similar personalities. You know, they're different, but they share very common values. You know, they're very self-driven, self-motivated, empathetic, you know, emotionally intelligent, caring leaders. you know, when I think about who I've decided to choose as a mentor, I look at those characteristics, and that's where I start then to have the conversation with that person.
Judy, I love it that she's using doctrinal terms to define the types of mentorship.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, in our article, you know, we talk about some tips, and really tip number one was, you know, mentorship's not a marriage. You know, so people look at mentorship and they just, the expectation is, well, this is going to be a long-term event. Nope, not necessarily. And as Melissa just related, it could last a short amount of time or one assignment, or it could be a lifetime. It's going to vary. And that's, you know, closely tied to what we called our tip number four, which is network. So Melissa is a woman. I am not. She's a logistician. I am not. However, we found common ground in terms of understanding about leadership, about officership, about dealing with situations. But then I also have to recognize my limitations as a mentor. There are certain things I'm just not going to be able to help her with directly, but I can sure partner her up with people who can. So I can find an officer who is a woman and a logistician, or a logistician who is a male, but they can help her with some component of what she needs as an officer. So as a mentor, I think that's part of your job, is kind of scanning the environment, seeing what your mentee needs, and then you know, figure out what resources you can marshal. So I've tried several different people with Melissa. Some are going to work, some are not, but you know, I at least, you know, make the introduction and see where that relationship goes. And then the last one, you know, our tip five was, you know, there's no perfect mentors. It's okay to move on. Hey, this isn't working out for me, or you know, I've kind of gotten what I needed. Thank you very much. And then, hey, we'll stay in contact. We're going to stay, you know, buds, whatever. But hey, you know, as a mentor, you know, I think it's time to move on from that. So all that, I think, what she expressed, and certainly I'm 100% in concurrence with her observations.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, too, is understand that you don't have to just stick with a single mentor at any given time. You can have multiple mentors for different reasons, and for shorter terms or longer terms, you could have all at one time, whatever. But also realizing that along with different roles, you have different stages of mentorship, and we have four stages. And there's not a thing you have to go from one to the other. There's not a set term or time limit for each stage because they can overlap. But only, I'm going to cover them really quickly and kind of explain what a mentor does in each one of those, but just very quickly. So with those four general stages, when we talk about them, it's the prescriptive stage. And that's where the mentee at the beginning has minimal experience and they really depend heavily on that mentor for support and instruction. So really we're sitting there, the mentors being a motivator and a teacher. And then the next stage typically is persuasive stage. And that's where the mentee develops more independence because they have some experience, but they still need direction. So the mentor persuades the mentee to find answers and seek challenges. So in that stage, a mentor is a guide or sort of a counselor during the process. And you have a collaborative stage. The mentee has enough experience and ability to solve problems and actively collaborate with the mentor. And this is sort of where we think about mentorship traditionally. This is really what we're thinking about, is that the mentor is there to be a career advisor and a role model. And then in the affirmative stage, the mentee is beginning to demonstrate mastery, but still requires the mentor's wisdom and insight to policies and people. And that's really where mentors serve a lot, is where they have that experience to pass on. And so in that case, the mentor is an advisor and a sounding board. And I really want to emphasize this point, that the mentor is always a strong listener and they always serve as a sounding board because they can help you see things differently that you may not have anticipated or just overlooked options that because of their experience and understanding, they can provide that guidance.
Yeah, I really like that that model. And as you were talking about it, certainly read it in Doctrine, but I was reflecting on you know, Melissa and my relationship. And, you know, we moved, I think, through those stages, you know, fairly quickly, just where she was in her development, former non-commissioned officer, you know, so she just had, you know, completely different perspective, you know, probably, you know, more mature in her development and where she was, you know, from a career perspective. So I think we, you know, pretty quickly through that. But, you know, which is also interesting is that, you know, the mentor, you know, learns in this process as well, particularly when we talk about, you know, generational differences. You know, I must say, you know, a first lieutenant and a colonel, there's a huge age and experience gap. But what I, as a mentor, not only did, you know, I see great things in her and wanted to help her, you know, in her development, but I also, as a leader, found it a great way to stay in touch with a younger generation and run things by her. Hey, what do you think about this? I'm really interested in your feedback because, I mean, I respect how you think and solve problems. What someone of your age and experience and kind of generational, location, you're going to see things differently than me. And so I find that to be incredibly helpful. And that's an interesting dynamic.
Oh, sure. And absolutely, in speaking in doctrinal terms, that's reverse mentoring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's where someone from a lesser, from a different position, I shouldn't say lesser, but from a different position of experience, and it usually is someone younger mentoring someone older.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we have a doctoral frame for that.
Always tying back to doctrine. That's exactly what we love to hear.
That's my job. That's my job.
All right. Differences in rank and culture can complicate feedback. It seems like, especially early in our career, the only time we talk to a senior leader who could be a good mentor is when we're under some scrutiny. That is, you know, we're getting some unwanted attention or directed leadership when things are going either wrong or not so well. But this doesn't mean that mentorship isn't available. In fact, it's probably the best time to get some mentorship. Lieutenant Sergeant Goski spoke about this and how she responded to this pressure.
I'm reminded of a situation that happened last summer when I was working in the maintenance company for 1780A. We were in a high op tempo preparing for a joint exercise, an assumption of the Contingency Response Force mission. And my maintainers were working round the clock in some pretty terrible heat in the bay, trying to repair and troubleshoot and get equipment back in the fight. I was on the bay floor throughout the week, trying to catch things that others weren't going to be, whether it was lapses in judgment, you know, with respect to safety, people trending towards heat injuries, bad decisions, maybe deconflicting leaders who were coming down and getting my guys off track. And I had just stepped out to go engage a leader for something when, you know, a few minutes later, I was getting called that one of my mechanics had hit his head on an engine panel and was completely knocked down on the floor. You know, and my heart dropped, like everything just stopped in that moment. You know, as the ambulance was pulling up to the motor pool, I found myself extraordinarily angry. Like I was angry at everyone who had put too much on us that week to work on, that was, you know, forcing my team to move too fast, to work in conditions where they weren't eating enough or drinking enough water because they felt like the timeline was pressing them too much. You know, and then I started blaming myself. What could I have done better in this situation? And so after returning from the ER that night, I mean, everything just hit me. I couldn't shake this terrible feeling. Like, I felt like crying. I mean, I was sitting there and I was like, this was ridiculous. But you know, I was so emotionally overwhelmed by what had happened. I'm thinking about my mechanic who I had just seen laying in a hospital bed covered in oil and grease, now under TBI protocol. And I felt myself getting very resentful towards the unit. You know, I was upset not knowing if I had done enough as a leader in that moment. And so I immediately thought about how Colonel Morgado would always tell me, you know, if I ever needed anything to call, day or night, time didn't matter. And, you know, I sat there for about an hour wondering if this was something that was worth reaching out about. You know, at one point I finally shot him a text, gave him a little context about the situation that happened. And he spoke just briefly about how I was feeling. And I mean, he immediately gave me a call. And, you know, a situation like that ended up turning out really well for me because, you know, he opened up and then shared with me a situation that happened when he was a junior officer. You know, all the raw emotions that came with it, how he processed the situation at the time, you know, something very analogous to how I was feeling. And in that moment, I felt like I could really connect with him. You know, in my heart, I knew truly he understood how I was feeling. And then any thoughts and advice he would give following that was coming from a place of common ground. So, you know, in a case like that, like my willingness to open up about something that felt uncomfortable, you know, the last thing you want to do is talking to a mentor and you're like, oh, well, I'm really upset about this thing that happened. I feel like a terrible person. I'm sitting in my apartment crying right now. You know, it's not something we would think ordinarily about doing with a leader. But, you know, having that moment of vulnerability allowed me to grow past that moment to process it better. And I was able to walk back into work the next day a better person and a leader ready to take care of my team and tackle whatever tasks were set out for that day.
That's pretty powerful stuff. I must say, Melissa has never shared that with me. So, you know, the fact that, you know, I was able to, you know, provide that context, you know, means a lot. But what it refreshes is it's really our tip number two, and maybe it should be tip number one, because it be a human first. And that's my number one rule of my leadership philosophy is be human first. I mean, you got to meet people, you know, where they are, and you got to, you know, begin what their needs as a human being. If you don't satisfy that, you're never going to get anywhere else as a professional. So you know, what do they need as a human being? So you know, meet the officer where they are. And you know, that obviously that was a you know pretty influential moment for her. You know, certainly the event I relayed to her. You know, we talked later about you know make yourself vulnerable. But that's really what it is, right? So you got to meet him in the right spot. So that was pretty powerful.
So I mentioned earlier there are several different types of mentoring. And one of these that comes to mind is that you've got supervisory mentoring, and that's an inherent responsibility for all leaders. But that focus is day-to-day type guidance about current positions and such. And where we really want to think about being a mentor is that a mentor has to be able to provide guidance that helps you be the best leader that you can be at this time and in this place and what is best for your career. So a mentor advises you on what is best for you in the Army, but your chain command is probably not the best place to look for a mentor because they're not looking for your best chances of what's happening for the Army. They want to look at what's happening best for the organization. So they've got a sort of a mismatch in how you want to address mentorship or what the focus of the mentorship is going to be.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, when you talk about you know, my three overlapping circles, right, of mentorship, coaching, and counseling, if you're someone's supervisor, you can spend some time in the mentorship circle, but you're really probably going to be in the other two for most of the time, just based upon that relationship and what the unit needs are. So you have to take a different approach, but you do got to provide some mentorship, right? So that's a really interesting way of looking at it. And really, what you've just said really helps me look at it in a different
way. Sure. And I think one of the issues there with someone who focuses on providing that supervisory mentoring, if they go overboard too far, it's perceived as favoritism. And we don't want anybody to have favoritism in a unit. But it goes back to the whole thing, too, that the chain of command can't show favoritism to a leader. So they've got to do their best to keep a balance of your best interest and the best interest of the unit, but realizing that a mentor, the way we think about mentors overall, it really is more about you as a leader, not the unit and it and its mission and accomplishment. So really we're looking for the mentor to balance that what is good for you and what's good for the whole Army.
Yeah, that point about favoritism, I mean, that could be pretty powerful, you know, particularly in the junior officer junior NCO community, like, wow, the boss is really spending, a lot of time with, Officer X. And that could really, and he would have to as a mentor, right, to maybe get at some of those learning points. So, yeah, that's a great point of a potential pitfall.
Right. And I think one of the things, too, is about as a supervisor is you really want to encourage folks to have mentors, but to pursue them outside of the chain of command to prevent that idea of favoritism. But the flip side is also realizing you got to give that subordinate time to pursue a mentorship relationship. You just can't say, go get a mentor. Okay, now what? But you got to give them the time to nurture the relationship. And you maybe as a supervisor, you have to provide guidance on how to find a mentor or where to find a mentor. So there's some overlap, like with your three circles of the Venn diagram. But when we think about it in the end, it really is looking out for you as a leader and how to be a better leader. Period. And that's really what we want to do with all of our doctrine is sort of help you with all the tools of how to be a better leader and then how to build better leaders for the Army, not just for yourself, but, for your legacy.
Something that is hard to face about mentorship is that it relies on vulnerability and that the mentee is really exposing their lack of knowledge and experience in seeking the mentorship. And that being a mentor is not something that we're trained to do outright. It's easy to look less than perfect when doing it. Lieutenant Zarna Gursky shared a story with me describing her thoughts on vulnerability.
Yeah, so there was a field grade officer I had worked under for some time who I wanted to get some mentorship from him. I thought he had the right knowledge for it, some of the things I was asking about. But what I definitely noticed, and this is why he ended up not becoming a mentor for me. I mean, it was the character piece for me. He ended up taking the side of the person that was going to talk at somebody. The conversation became very self-centered, instead of more active listening or kind of looking to see where he could be of more support, it became very much like all about him and all about his own stories. And, it was clear to me that was a person I didn't want to have a mentoring relationship with. And, I think maybe I'd reached back out once more for some advice on some things. But, after that, I didn't seek out anything further. just because I didn't find it was productive and I wasn't going to get what I was hoping for out of it. Fortunately for me, at the point that it happened, I already had some mentors. I think if it was like my first experience with a mentor, that could have caused me to hesitate in seeking out somebody else. But, you know, I was really fortunate that when that had happened, I had already had other mentors. And I felt enough, I guess, self-worth and value in myself and knowing the benefits I'd already gotten from other mentors that it was okay to say, hey, this person is just not going to work out for me. They're not going to be the right person that I want to keep in my network. And so, I was, completely at peace and okay with just letting that die off or cutting sling load in that situation and just seeking out somebody else.
Yeah, I think we had mentioned it earlier about the 2 years, one mouth rule. I've lived my life by that dictum. And so nowhere more important than in mentorship. You got to listen twice as much as you speak. Perhaps one of the difficulties of senior leaders at times who get to that rank and like to hear themselves talk. I'm sure I fall into that category every now and then. I try not to, but that will turn people off, right? You gotta be able to listen so you really understand what the problem is before you engage your mouth. But the being vulnerable piece, which we call our tip number six. Tip number three was 2 years, one mouth. Tip number six, be vulnerable. You gotta be open to feedback, and sometimes you're gonna hear things that you're not gonna like. But it just reminds me when I do the in-brief at the Command Assessment Program this past summer, one of the things I mentioned to all the new candidates is you're going to hear a lot of great things about you and you're going to pat yourself on the back because they sound really good, but be prepared to hear about things that are going to make you angry because we are trying to show you other parts of yourself. And so you got to be vulnerable because you're not going to get better unless you get exposure to that. And coupled with that, as a mentee, and I consider myself a mentee as well, not just a mentor. But when I was considering going to, SAMS, to the Advanced Military Studies Program, I reached out to four mentors, and they were unanimous 4-0 to not go to SAMS. They're like, hey, the war's on. You need to get back in the fight. I just come back from OIF-1, but hey, you need to get back in the fight. And I ignored the recommendations of my mentors because I really wanted to go to the School of Advanced Military Studies, and so I did that. It was my call, and I'd make the same decision again today, right? But sometimes you have to make sense of that feedback that you're getting for the mentors and see how it fits into what you want to do as a person and a professional. And they're not always going to match, but it's good advice. I'm glad I asked those core mentors for their opinion, and their response helped me formulate my attitude and like, okay, it even convinced me more that I needed to go, which is maybe, thick-headed of me, I don't know. But that was an important part. But it was a good dialogue to have regardless with those mentors.
Well, I think building on your point about being vulnerable, mentorship is a human relationship and between two humans. And so vulnerability is going to be part of that. But you also have some responsibilities as both a mentor and a mentee. And I'm going to talk about those areas a little bit. Because what you just said sort of illustrates all five of those points. So when I talk about that, it says... with those, I say those five, but there's significant responsibilities that both mentors and mentees have in regards to respect, trust, realistic expectations, self-perception, communication, and time. And your anecdote hits on every single one of those that, you built up a relationship with each of those mentors that you had respect with to and from. It's a two-way street. And while you respected what their advice was, you didn't have to abide by it. You didn't have to follow it. And also that builds on the trust that you had with each of those mentors, because you have to work on trust. Trust isn't just something that, oh, I know you, I trust you. No, it's something that has to be built. You have to have some reason to have trust. And then those realistic expectations and sort of your self-perception, that with your mentors, like you said, all four of them gave you different things and you knew information from each one of them. But your self-perception, going back to what you needed and what you wanted, was able to take that information and go, maybe this is the best decision for me. Communication. Obviously, that was part of what you had with each mentor because they could give you that guidance and their view, but you could also tell them why. No, thank you, but that's not really what I need to do. And then the time. Obviously, time is a commitment on both parts for a mentee and a mentor, because if you have no time, then obviously you're just not going to build a relationship. But you had a very good combination of all of those responsibilities with each of those mentors so they could give you that feedback, give you that guidance, but understand that your decision in the end was your decision. You didn't have to do what they told you. And in the end, it worked out very well for you because who knew you were going to be the director some years later. So, but I think that's one of those things that when you're working with mentors, realizing that it is a relationship between two human beings and you're both vulnerable for different reasons, but you're there to build a professional relationship, you know, and it's built on trust and respect.
Yeah, I mean, you heard it in Melissa's comments, right? Because it all begins and ends with trust. Obviously, that officer that she approached because of their knowledge base and what they thought they could provide failed on the trust aspect because she perceived some character issues that she just could not live with. And so unless that trust exists, you're not going to get anywhere.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things, too, is that you have to be able to respect the person you're getting your mentorship relationship built with. Because if you don't respect somebody, are you really going to take whatever guidance they give you? And are you going to, you know, integrate it into your life? If you don't really respect them, are you really going to respect what they have to tell you? So I think all of those things are important.
Yeah, I would say that's probably why mandatory, mentors probably fail, right? Because if you don't cultivate those things, you're just not going to get there. And when you're forced to accept a mentor, I just don't see how that anymore.
And is that place to that respect and trust? Because just because you're told to be my mentor, I don't know. Do I trust you? Because there are going to be things I'm going to tell you that maybe I don't want to share with everyone else. And do I have the trust that you're not going to tell my story to everyone else just because you're my mentor assigned? But all very important parts. And I think that to build that relationship, it's all on trust and respect. Those have to be integral regardless.
Colonel Morgado, both you and I have been around the Army that restricted women from combat arms positions and have seen the transition occur over the past decade to become more inclusive. And Judy, you've seen this over the span of your 40-year Army career as a civilian and a green suitor. This dynamic challenges us to be more empathetic and understanding, or at least try to adjust our biases that we've had. Lieutenant Zaragoski has dealt with this dynamic primarily in her time as an NCO, so she shared the story with me.
When I left from AIT to get to my first duty station at then Fort Hood, our battalion had just started integrating. It was myself and the two females I left AIT with, the first ones coming in for our MOS. And so, you know, I didn't appreciate it at the time, until after I'd left the unit and I was no longer working, you know, for my battalion commander. But his decision to choose me as a driver was a little groundbreaking. And I think he had shared with me, or, you know, the sergeant major had shared with me at one point that, you know, he had sought out some mentorship of his own when he was getting ready to make the decision. At the time, it was unheard of for a male combat arms battalion commander to have a female driver. Nobody thought that was going to work. And, you know, what he had always told me was he knew I had the maturity and the right character to handle the situation. If you would even call it a situation, right? But to handle, you know, kind of the dynamic, I guess, you know, my sergeant major had told him to not rob me of the opportunity of that job based on my gender. You know, if I was most qualified for the job, I was most qualified for the job. And, you know, so early on in my career, I had seen where the gender dynamic can become challenging and where it meant a lot to me, you know, especially now as I look back on it years later. I'm grateful, right, that a male in a senior position was willing to take a chance on me, because that opportunity 100% shaped my career and really changed the course of my career. As I look at the mentors that I've had, and for really no particular reason, most of my mentors have been male. They were just the leaders that I gravitated towards, you know, not really looking at the gender, just who they were as people, where their head and their hearts were.
Yeah, I mean, I will note that the reason why Melissa isn't live with us today is that she's forward deployed in theater, right? So she is, you know, dodging rockets, dodging a few other things. So she's got skin in the game, and she's doing a hell of a job. But that understanding of that gender dynamic, you know, it is what it is, because we're human beings, and that's, you know, can be a challenge or can be a barrier to mentorship at times. It has not been for her. It has not been for me, but it can be for some. I think we have to appreciate that there are going to be unique challenges based on gender or any other, you know, type of differences that we all had. It's just part of being a human. I mean, my wife served in the Army for 10 years. Judy, you serve, even though I would think, well, you know, my wife of 10 years, I kind of learned some of the challenges of what it was. She was a Black Hawk pilot, aviation unit, male-dominated environment. So just I learned secondhand from her of some of the challenges that a woman has to fight through at times. The things have changed a little bit since then. But I'm not her, you know, and I'm not you, Judy, so I can't see the world in the same exact way. But heck, I could be empathetic, though, right? And that's what, you know, one of the biggest tools in your toolbox as a leader is being empathetic and trying to understand that perspective. So that's incredibly important. So it's been great just learning, you know, going back to reverse mentorship, learning about current conditions in the Army with the relationship, you know, with women and how they're assuming these roles through her eyes and helping me understand so I can be better at what I do to help us a more effective organization. So it's just a factor we have to be comfortable with operating in because it's part of being a human.
Yes, I'm almost 40 years with the Army, so I'm like telling my age. But the Army has come a very long way. We still have a way to go. Part of it is just, I think it's the whole thing of, well, looking at who's the best person for a job, a position, a mission, whatever it is, not looking at what their gender may be, but are they the best skill? Are they the best suited for whatever that is? And accepting that that happens, that we've got folks that maybe there are women who are better for a particular job or a position. I think back to when I was a very, very junior lieutenant, I got to interview to be one of the GO's aides. And at the end, after the whole interview process, I got told, I would take you as my aide, but you're a woman. Okay. And then I was told that the optics just weren't going to fly, that, you know, he was a combat arms GO and it wasn't going to happen. But I learned a lot from the process of going through that. But it was also, I think some of the other folks that are around me at the time also learned from that process that, okay, well, who is best suited for that job? Okay. And I think it's a mindset. It's an evolution. So like I said, Army has come a long way in 40 years. Do we have still way to go? Yes. There's always room for improvement because we're never perfect. And so we can't be the perfect version of ourselves, but we can certainly be a better version of ourselves. And I think that's what we have to look for as leaders is how do we build ourselves to be better than we are today? Oh, and by the way, we're not comparing ourselves, you know, against Lieutenant so-and-so or Sergeant so-and-so. We're comparing ourselves to, in my case, Judy of yesterday or Judy of last year. Am I better than that? Yes. And if I'm not, then what am I doing to make myself better than where I was yesterday? And I think mentorship and being a mentee, that goes back to the vulnerability part too, is don't think that you don't have something to offer to someone else as a leader. I know several of my peers through time are like, I can't be a mentor. And they're like, why? Well, I don't have anything to offer. Yes, you do. You've got experience and you've got wisdom that you can share. So I'm telling you that as a leader, regardless of where you think you are, you can be a mentor to someone. Offer yourself up. Be vulnerable. Because it's a relationship that helps you evolve because you become a better leader by understanding other people's situations. And you help someone else become a better leader. So I really think that's the best thing I can say for mentorship is it makes us better and it makes the Army better. And like I said, we've come a long way. We just have a long way to go.
Yeah, I'll only add to that. You really sparked some thought is that senior leaders need to create that space, right? At echelon, right? So you have to create a space for mentorship to happen and for those. And not only mentorship, but counseling and coaching, right? You have to create that space and understand that is for everyone, right? And so you as a leader sometimes have to take risk in what you're doing and how you conduct business in order to afford those opportunities to people and have that growth take place.
Right. I think it's understanding that it's not just making space for it, but understanding just how important it is to someone else's development, period. That, you know, each one has a place because there's a purpose for each one, but realizing that providing feedback, you know, I think Trump people calls it the breakfast of champions. I think it's more than that. It is just the basic fabric of the Army. We want to build leaders. We want to make things happen. But how do we do that? Well, you have to develop them. How do you do that? Provide feedback, period.
Yeah. And I'll also, as someone who was growing up in my Army career, very reticent to attend social events in the Army and to attend those spaces that when they are created are meant for that kind of network. You know, it's not something you necessarily want to do. Maybe you want to go home and go on a date with your wife or play golf or whatever the case may be. Well, make yourself vulnerable. Put yourself in those social positions that are created for you by general officers, by colonels, by sergeants major, so that, you know, you can show yourself that you do have a human side, and they can show to you that they have a human side, and create those not so formal connections with those seniors and people who can give you some mentorship. I'd like to thank Colonel Morgado and Mrs. Price for a great discussion, and Lieutenant Sergeant Guski for sharing her thoughts with us today. Before we sign off, are there any last thoughts that you would like to share?
Sure. I would say when we think about mentorship, coaching, counseling, it's really about being a steward of the profession. People struggle with that idea. You know, what does this mean by being a steward of the profession? You know, General George has been very clear about, you know, it being one of the priorities of doing that. I mean, so mentorship falls right smack dab in the middle of what that is. We are a profession. We have specialized knowledge. We regulate ourselves. It requires preparation, education, and knowledge. And then to steward that means it's taking care of the future. And you really hit on that is, you know, how do we ensure success tomorrow and the day after and next week? And mentorship helps do that, right? It helps us steward the profession for long-term success of the organization. And if we don't invest time and energy in it, it's just not going to happen by itself. People have to do it. And so hopefully 622.1 is a great tool. I hope people use it because it's incredibly helpful. Certainly read our article for, you know, maybe some add-ons and things you can use to practically put into use. But if you want to be a steward of the profession, you got to get in the mentoring, coaching, and counseling business.
Absolutely agree. And that's why I was talking about, you know, provide feedback, because that is just a tool for a leader to help develop themselves and their subordinates. And we won't have a future army if we don't develop our leaders now. So you have to think forward. It's not just, oh, what are we doing today? No, really, when you're talking about mentorship, you're forming the leaders of tomorrow that inform our army 5, 10, 15 years from now. And that's really what's important, is making sure that we had everybody ready to be their best as a leader.
All right, thank you guys for attending today. Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the crew in the Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this great show. Please don't forget to subscribe on Google, Apple, or Spotify podcasts, and follow us on social media at US Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and other publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the U.S. Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Nate Rice, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.